Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Then the Jews began to complain about him because he said, "I'm the bread that came down from heaven." They were saying, "Is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can he now say, 'I've come down from heaven'?" Jesus answered them, "Do not complain among yourselves. No one can come to me unless drawn by the Father who sent me, and I will raise that person up on the last day. It is written in the prophets, 'And they shall all be taught by God.' Everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me. Not that anyone has seen the Father except the one who is from God. He has seen the Father. Very truly, I tell you, whoever believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, and they died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven so that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats of this bread will live forever, and the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh." She stares into her coffee cup, watching the cream swirling around, but not really seeing anything. Some days she's just so tired. The degrading comments, the catcalls, the infantilizing assumptions about what she wants out of work and life and friendships. Like every woman she knows, she's got Me Too stories that she never shares. She's got a story about the time she realized a pay discrepancy, went to what she was sure would be sympathetic ears, and when she told what she knew, was immediately drowned out by a chorus from both the men and the women around her of, "Oh, I'm so sick of all this political correctness." The first stanza of John O'Donohue's poetic prayer blessing called A Morning Offering begins as if the first thought that someone might have upon waking up in the morning after a night full of dreams: "I bless the night that nourished my heart to set the ghosts of longing free, free into the flow and figure of dream that went to harvest from the dark bread for the hunger no one sees." It's a bracing thought for me when I realize that from the moment I look in the mirror in the morning, every human being that I see throughout the day is someone who is hungry for something. Acceptance, affirmation, appreciation, success, whatever that might mean in any different context. A compelling reason to hold out hope. Each of us has a hunger for something. John tells us that the crowd that kept following Jesus did so because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. So I'm thinking, if they're able to keep up with the apparent wanderings of Jesus and his disciples, they must be people who are not too ill to travel and move around. But it's the signs that they see him doing for the sick that compel them. Maybe they have family members at home who are sick. And since, as John says, they keep following him, they must be people who have time available. As in, nothing else to lose, no employment demanding their presence, and anxious enough to give this much commitment of effort and time to a desperate pursuit. He may be the last hope of those without financial resources, who have at least one sick or suffering child or spouse or parent depending on them. They also bring with them the layered anguishes of being an occupied people, excluded from the segments of the economy that could provide for real security and stability, on top of being ill themselves or having a family member or more than one to take care of. What does it mean to them? The ones in this crowd for whom this is physically a life and death situation. When Jesus says, "Whoever comes to me will never be hungry. It doesn't seem like they're looking for a philosophical response to a vaguely spiritual hunger. They come to him who, as people who have already learned through soul-crushing experience that they should just expect always to be physically hungry and physically thirsty. Their access to water and food is permanently restricted by events that may have happened generations ago that nobody now living sees any need to rectify. Military dominance followed by extraction of resources by occupying or corrupt powers, and the imposition then of strict limits on the people's ability to escape or rise above the circumstances that they're left in. So they and their parents and their grandparents before them, and maybe going back and back and back, have learned just to expect that in this life you're going to be hungry and you're going to be thirsty. It's just the way of the world. And Jesus says, not on my watch. That is not the way of the world that I bring. And I bring the true and real world. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry. Not just the ones of resources of and power and advantage. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Not on my watch. No wonder the theocratic authorities complained when Jesus said, I'm the bread that came down from heaven. They said, that guy's not a loaf of bread that came down from heaven. He's that guy, right? You know, that guy with Joseph's son. I mean, come on, we know his dad and his mom. He didn't come down from heaven. He came from like Weaverville or something like that. And Jesus said to them, don't be complaining among yourselves. These people and anybody else who comes to me could only have done that if they were drawn to me by the God who sent me. And whoever they are, I will raise them up on the last day. Whoever they are, I will save them, in other words. No matter if they're the lowest of the dregs at the bottom of society, the lowliest caste, the ones regarded as the most unwelcome, the ones whom comfortable people think they wish didn't exist, so they could just go back to understanding the world in black and white terms, literally sometimes as in this color here, that color there, with us living in secure abundance, and they, God bless them, hope they do well. If it's squalor and corruption, that's their problem. And Jesus said, no. They don't have to be hungry either. Starting now. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, he said in John's Greek, using the same word for hunger that shows up all over the New Testament, that means exactly what it says in an absolutely physical sense. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. Jesus fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he hungered. He was famished, in the words of the New Revised Standard Version. When Jesus and his disciples came from Bethany, he was hungry. And he went to a fig tree, but there was nothing on it but leaves. And in his physical hunger, his disciples heard him curse that tree, even though figs weren't even in season yet. In Paul's letter to the church in Rome, he quotes the dominant translation of Proverbs at the time. If your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. To which Paul immediately provides his own commentary. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You overcome evil with good by feeding your enemies when they're hungry. Which sounds to me like hunger itself is evil. Not the philosophical kind of hunger, but the physical hunger that leads to bodily starvation. Regardless of whether it's experienced by your closest family member or your worst enemy. It's just hunger is just evil, and it is to be overcome with food, which would mean that food that answers hunger is good, even in regard to your least favorite people on earth. And Jesus says, whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. Darryl Davis is an R&B piano player. He's played with people like Chuck Berry, Jerry Lee Lewis, B.B. King, and many, many others. He is also African American. He is also Christian. For decades, Darryl Davis has been involved in his own personal ministry of initiating friendships, not strategic conversation partnerships, but friendships with members of white supremacist groups, especially the Klan. There are years worth of stories, decades now of stories, of haters meeting with Davis and being at first confused at what they were looking at, and then disarmed by his grace and friendliness, and then drawn in by his stance of listening. He has said repeatedly that he's not trying to convert anybody. He has converted a bunch of people, or God has through him. But he's not going there to convert anybody. He's just going to listen to them. In the course of listening and assuming a stance of building friendship, he often ends up materially helping them, bringing, for example, the children of a convict to the prison so they could visit their father. And after doing that a couple times, they said, you know, nobody else in the Klan is doing this for us. This black guy is doing it for us. Sending gifts to family members on special days, baby showers and so on. Sitting next to them when they're in court. Standing alongside them as counter-protesters accost both the white nationalists and Davis himself, whose open stance they find appalling. He said, it's going to plant a seed. That's what he said about the loving, dangerous Christian mission that he takes on again and again and again. The seed may not blossom today or tomorrow or the next day, but eventually it will come out because the truth never can be squashed. Bread for the hunger no one sees. For all those who hunger and thirst for righteousness in a world that is just starving for it, God speaks and moves and feeds our deepest, most frightened and hopeful and precarious hungers in many ways, but often most visibly and viscerally through relationships between people, between friends, between enemies, between the howling stomachs and weary feet of a desperate crowd and the human hands of Jesus and his disciples. And just as God meets our aching hunger for peace and justice and mercy and righteousness through the calling and equipping of disciples, God also meets head-on the specter of starvation, physical starvation, that haunts the world by putting you and me, disciples, into the world, flawed but basically good and generous disciples of Christ, to be Jesus' open hands, seeing to it that everyone has access to food. Far up the Ba Na Hill near Da Nang City in Vietnam, there's a new walkway structure just opened up this year, called the Golden Bridge. It's a track that's painted gold, and it's supported in part by two giant stone hands that extend from the mountainside. If you look at your hands and turn your palms up, imagine holding a gently curving track in your two outstretched hands, and imagine about 30 people standing on that track over each of your palms. That's the scale of the size of those hands they've built. The architect said they want it to look like, in their words, giant hands of gods, plural, pulling a strip of gold out of the land. But those of us who believe that God has been revealed in the open hands of Jesus see with a different perspective. It's not the strip of gold that we notice. It's the hands turned upward and open to hold whoever may come, all the unpredictable kinds of people with backgrounds from all over the world, Hands that don't discriminate based on what you look like or where you came from. Don't ask you for any explanations. Don't judge you. Don't send you one way and your parents or your children another. Don't threaten your life if you're seen here after dark. Don't tell you how wrong or dumb or unworthy you are for the way you think. We notice the hands reaching out and up. And although they do induce awe because of their scale, and because by design they look ancient and weathered as if they'd been there for millennia, their attitude is welcoming and sturdy as mountain stone. It's the hands held out that we notice, not the gold, but the hands held out that we notice, reaching out as if to offer bread for the whole world. Tom Long recently said he thought the Apostles' Creed was in exactly the right order chronologically. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. He said God was a parent before God was a creator. And the creation was generated not by the loneliness and need of God, but out of deep parental love. The kind of love that parents have who will stop at nothing to be sure that their children are fed and will not stand for the thought that somebody else's children will go to bed hungry tonight. The kind of love that God showed us in Jesus Christ when he said, "I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats of this bread will live forever. And the bread that I will give for the life of the world is my flesh." O Israel, hope in the Lord. For with the Lord there is steadfast love, and with him is great power to redeem.